shows, and plenty of interesting nuggets and tidbits that are blogged about throughout the week. The phone lines are open for anyone interested in calling in and joining our discussion tonight. Our number is 1-504-273-7379. Of the Mayan Cemetery. I'm flying solo tonight. This is your host, Chip. Nicole will not be here to join us this week. We will continue on without her. For everyone who was wondering about the last week's episode, I guess it's kind of lost in the ether. There was a hurricane, if you didn't know that, came through Louisiana. And that's where the mothership's located out of there, New Orleans there, so deal with it. Even though I did enjoy my rant against science on there, and how I was basically tired of it. But I guess it's lost, like I said, in the ether for all of eternity for everyone. So maybe I'm lucky that it got lost, because I'm sure it'll be held against me sometime in the future that I didn't care for scientists trying to put paranormal and research into a scientific box, you know, to package it up all nice and neatly, because I definitely feel like there's some aspects of science as we know it and the scientific method that are just a waste of time when trying to investigate the paranormal and UFO research. That is, it some aspects of it is good for a start, but eventually you have to throw the yoke off of science and start plowing your own trail, so to speak, into that kind of research. So that's the problem with a lot of scientists, I think, these days. They get, to kind of recap it, I think a lot of them are scared to go out on their own and make independent opinions. I think a lot of them don't really want to risk their tenure or any kind of, grants that they may have written some nice papers for to get in and then get ostracized in the community, which I guess you can understand. You know, nobody wanting to risk their career on those kind of things. It's only people that have actually been in it for some 25, 30 years that are actually willing to go out there and say some radical things and start thinking differently. But so that's my argument against science in a nutshell that we lost last week. And like I said, I'm sure it'll be held against me well into the future. Man, that's fine. Whatever. You know, it's, you know, I don't do this show to not voice my opinion. And it's something that, as a host, I've come to terms with and realized that there are hosts out here in podcasts and internet radio land that are just good interviewers and hosts. And then there's some that are opinionated, right? And in my opinion, if you're just going to hear a parrot squawk questions to someone without an opinion, well, then where's the fun in that? You know, you might as well have an opinion to go along with it while you're at it. And at the same time, if something sucks or you don't believe it, then don't have them on your show. You know, don't have them on just to rag on them later kind of thing. Do a show about what you like and do what you like, basically. And give the airtime to people that you think deserve it. So, having said that, without further ado, we have our guest, Ochane Lele, on us tonight. Are you here?
I'm here.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us. I think I hopefully kind of prepped you for a going hot quickly kind of situation.
Yeah, I think I'm well prepared.
That's what usually ends up going on You know, for the most part, for a lot of our interviews, when we were on Blog Talk, we'd have time to shoot the breeze, so to speak, you know, 10 minutes before the show. But it seems like now, being on a network, it's on, and we're both on at the same time, and we get to learn about each other as we go, which is perfectly fine with me. Hopefully you don't mind it too much.
No, I don't mind at all.
There you go. I know you you had an interview back in December with our buddies, the Church of Mavis, here on the same network.
Yes, I did, and that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that.
There you go. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Jeff, and I think at the time he still had Guy with him, Guy Weddle. Both of them really did Nicole and I a big favor in kind of cheerleading us to get on the network here from our Blog Talk roots, you know, so to speak. I really like them. I like Tree Sheridan. I like a lot of the other original shows we have on here, like Second Sight, NYC, and of course, you know, the flagship show with Joe Montaldo, UFO Undercover. We'd be nowhere without them, basically, you know. So they stuck their...
I was listening to that earlier. I was trying to get familiar with the network, and you have some pretty awesome stuff going on.
Yeah, you know what I like about it is it's original programming, and it's not a lot of syndicated stuff like you'll see on some other networks. Not to say that there's something wrong with syndication, because obviously, you know, people like hearing that if you're getting syndicated, right? But I like the idea that a lot of our hosts are opinionated. You know, it's not just the parrot interview festival.
It's good to have opinion.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And that way you don't let, like, a lot of the topics just run you over, you know, and instead of just blanketly accepting them. And, you know, I've always kind of been in the train of thought that I understand that a lot of this, there's aspects of this that are entertainment, you know, but there's also a lot of it that's information, you know, and that's what I kind of touted with having you on here today. When it comes to Afro-American and Cuban religious practices, and getting that out in the light, because there's a lot of misconceptions and ill-conceived notions that go along with that.
It's insane, and if you read the papers, especially in the large cities, it's like every month or two there's this crazy stuff coming up. You know, if somebody's the wrong way, or if they find a chicken feather in the street, oh my God, it's the San Pedros.
Yeah, I was just about to say, it always has something to do with the dead chicken and chicken blood, right?
Exactly.
It always has something to do with that. And to even to get into it a little better, I've discussed a lot of things with people I work with, which, you know, as I'm sure you'll run into, that you'll have a lot of people give you lip service to the research that you've done, right, and respect it in one aspect, and then silently come to you one-on-one, you know, on the side and say, oh, by the way, what do you know about, you know, XYZ, or, you know, can you help me get in touch with certain individuals? And and it's that aspect to the whole thing that I like to... that I like, because it's like, you know, I know I'm looked at my regular job like I'm crazy sometimes, you know, and to hear them come to me later on and say, hey, do you know anyone in this aspect? I'm like, finally, you know, yes, you get it, I get it, you know, just next time someone tries to look at me like I'm got a head sticking out of my neck, could you help me out, you know?
Been there, done that.
Yeah, and like I was discussing a girl at work who's black, I was like, you know, there's something missing in the paranormal and UFO aspect of research, and that's the minority opinion and the minority experience as a whole. You get a lot of Central America and South America aspects to it, but in the black community, I've heard very little. You know, you'll get the original abduction stories of Betty and Barney Hill, you know, was an interracial couple. And then, you know, besides them, I, you know, am hard pressed to start naming names. You know, there's a Wilbur Allen who claims to have contact, and then it's a void, you know. And that's why I like having, I guess, like you wanted to help fill that void, you know, because it's there. I just got to know how to tap it, you know.
Oh, it's out there. It's big. And you know, I find it interesting that you call it a minority voice.
Yeah.
Because quite honestly, our numbers are huge. You know,
yeah.
They're huge. And the face of America is changing. You know, the Eurocentric ideals, the Eurocentric religions, the Eurocentric mindsets, they're melting away. They're melting away. They don't work. They've never really worked. You know, because Eurocentric cultures are about domination. And I think that's why slowly this religion, this faith is coming out into the open. And people are looking at it like it's something that's just come out of the woodwork all of a sudden, but it's been here all the time. You know, it was brought on it with the slave trades.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the next 10, 20 years, you're going to see a really accelerated period of growth and stuff that people never thought they would be, you know, face-to-face with or would have to deal with. It's really going to come out into the mainstream. It's really going to be open.
Yeah, that's for sure. And yeah, you know, it is kind of an outdated term, I guess, to call it minority, because it's increasing. You know what I mean? It's an increasing, quote-unquote, minority group that, you know, the reality is that, you know, the white Anglo-Saxon male, female is on the decline, you know, with the advent of, you know, South American cultures and African cultures coming in, there's starting to become an even split between everybody, you know? So you're right, you know, to sit there and call certain aspects minority is kind of falling to the wayside as well.
Exactly. And even though it's, you know, we haven't even really talked about
mm-hmm.
our De La Woon, it's our oral holy book, teaches that Caucasians were the last race born on the earth. And in time, Caucasians are going to be the first one to melt away. And we're seeing that now. We're seeing that in the United States. What has been up until now, the quote-unquote majority race, Hispanics, blacks, other groups, everyone is outnumbering that slowly. So things are changing. The scale of balance in the world is tipping slowly.
Definitely. And it's not necessarily for the worse either. And
no,
that's what
not
a lot
at
of
all.
People like to think. You know, they think that, you know, because the good old days, quote unquote, right? You know,
yeah.
You know that old
boy mentality.
Yeah, there's that mentality of, you know, longing for something that never really existed. It was just an ideal, you know, and having to break that in a lot of individuals is very painful for them, you know.
Yes, it really is.
That's for sure. And how? So you've published a few books here out of Inner Traditions. Well, more than a few, going back all the way to 2000. Well, to 2000, I guess it is, right?
Yes,
with the Secrets of Afro-Cuban Divination.
Okay. Yeah.
Good. I'd like to kind of like roll through all your books while we got you tonight, and of course, end with our most latest and greatest that you've done, and that I think they said something like 8 years in the making was your latest release.
Yes, and it's selling like crazy already. I've never had a book sell this quickly or this fast, and
nice.
It's going viral on the net. It's already selling out of bookstores. It's wonderful. I've never had a book sell this well.
Yes, and your latest book is Sacrificial Ceremonies of Santeria, and they can find it on innertraditions.com or amazon.com, right?
Yes, and also any brick and mortar bookstore, they'll have it.
Nice, you've actually got it in the brick and mortars. That's always good. Nicole would always ask, do you have it on ebook yet for the Kindle or anything like that?
All of my books are on ebook except for this one. I think it's going to be about 2 or 3 more weeks before it's available.
Cool, fantastic. So there you go out there, nerds. You don't have to actually go and buy a paperback book anymore.
No, if you can get the ebook, it's just as good.
Yep, it reads just the same. Words are the same.
It does, but don't get me started on the aspect of permanency with ebooks. You know, they're good, but they're bad. We can't lose our in-print books. We can't.
There
you go. Very dangerous times.
You know, there's something Nicole came up with a while back was for survival aspects. You know, when it comes to 2012 and apocalypse discussions and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What she always considered doing was go ahead and get yourself a Kindle loaded up with all your books and just put it in a Faraday box. You know, so solar flare proof, EMP proof, boom, yeah. You'll have it forever. Just, you know, make sure you have something to plug it into to keep it charged, right?
Yeah, something to keep it charged. But, you know, that's not what worries me about ebooks. Not at all.
No?
History can be rewritten. And this has already happened in the ebook world. I don't want to go into, like, other names and titles on the show. But sure. There was a book that came out, and right after it came out, the person that it was about, or the person that the chapter was about, wanted to sue the publisher and the author right away. So the publisher extracted all the material that was libelous, and they pulled the books off the shelves and out of the warehouses, and then they replaced the ebook edition with the new edition. And the next day, when people turned their ebook readers on, everything got switched out. Literally, history was rewritten. And the only way people knew what was in the original edition of the book was if they bought the book.
Yeah.
And there's been a couple of instances where Amazon has put stuff up that they thought was in the public domain, mm-hmm. and then they discovered it wasn't in the public domain. And what did they do? They reached into people's e-readers and pulled those books out. So if we switch to just an e-book technology, you know, history is already always written by the victors. It's quite possible that somebody could literally rewrite a book,
yep.
re-upload it, and all the old copies are gone, the record's destroyed. Whereas if you have a print book, there's always the chance somewhere in some dusty shelf in some old library, even a personal bookshelf, there's a copy of this book and a copy of that record. So nobody's really thinking about that aspect of the technology yet, but you know, without sounding like I myself get into conspiracy theories, which
sure.
I like.
Nothing wrong with dabbling in those every once in a while, you know, and some of them are very viable, let's put it
yeah,
that way.
It could bite us in the ass, literally,
yeah.
You know. So, people, don't give up your print books, you know. Keep
that's
both.
For sure.
Both are good. Both are good.
That is for sure. And your very first book back in 2000, How to Cast, you're going to have to help me with this word.
Okay, it's called The Secrets of Afro-Cuban Divination,
mm-hmm.
How to Cast the Dilagoon, the Oracle.
Dilagoon. Okay.
Dilagoon.
All right, go ahead and tell us about that. Tell us about the Dilagoon. This is a term I've never heard of.
Most people haven't, unless you're a student of cultural anthropology, or unless you're actually in the religion, the Lukumi faith itself. But Dilogun, it's a rather fascinating thing. It's an oral holy book that has been passed from priest to priest, or priest to priestess,
mm-hmm.
father to son, mother to daughter, etc., over the centuries. With
okay.
the first stirrings of the Yoruba... I can't even talk tonight. What's wrong with me? With the first stirrings of the Yoruba race. It's never really been written down, not until the time of William Bascom, who was Dr. Bascom, PhD. But it is both a system of folkloric categorization. It's sacred stories, proverbs, ebos, histories, and it's also a system of divination. So it serves a practical purpose for divination. And also, it's a way of storing our folklore, our history, our oral literature. And that, in a nutshell, is the Dilagoon. It's actually very vast. Each living priest or priestess is somewhat of a folkloric library. We each have a small part of it. But when you put all those pieces together, it's really quite huge. It's big. It's bigger than any other holy book written of any other faith out there. And any aspect of life, whether it's love, finances, spirituality, afterlife, any practical concerns, there's always something in the Dilagoon that addresses that. It addresses all the levels of our being. It addresses humanity. It addresses our past. It speaks of our present. It looks into our future. So it's quite a brilliant system. There's nothing else out there like it.
Now, when it comes to this... there's got to be a lot of controversy behind it, especially between the individuals passing down the information, right? You know, a lot of a a lot of division between what is actually, you know, who is actually in charge of the right line of information, correct?
Oh, yes. There's been many a night where after a ritual, after an asiento or a crowning of a new priest or priestess, a yawol, I've sat around and listened to the elder heads, people that have 30, 40, 50, 60 years as a priest or a priestess, and they argue the different versions that are told with the patakis, the proverbs, what the oddu, which are like chapters of the Dilogun, what they mean, what they address. And one of the things I've done for years, since like the late 80s, early 90s, is I have cataloged all these different views, taken copious notes, worked to rectify different versions of the patakis. And it's been a consuming piece of work. It's massive. I have an entire, like, 6'1" bookshelf that's nothing but filled with notes and field work and research. And it's almost impossible to keep up with. Somehow I manage, though. I devote my life to this.
There you go. Nice. Very nice. Yeah, there's always going to be someone that feels slighted, like they're... information wasn't included, I'm sure. You know, you probably run into that a lot, and you're trying to record everything down as much as possible. But there's nothing wrong with a different point of view from an individual, from the human aspect of it all, you know, especially when you're talking about oral history. A lot of that is in Native American culture, you know, has been oral history, and it seems to have survived just fine, you know. And I think a lot of it probably that you've run into was more than likely ego-driven, you know, from a lot of the priestesses, especially ones that have been there for, like you said, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. That's incredible, you know.
Yeah, they have that kind of stuff. Foundation. Guard that. They guard the fundamental.
Oh, yeah, there you go. It, what do they call it?
Their foundation, their fundamental.
Yeah. Oh, there you go, there you go. Yeah. So that is the first book that you ended up writing there.
Yeah, and that was just a brief primer. That was a real basic book. And what was funny is Inner Traditions wanted to call that the complete Dilogun or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, we can't do that. This is nowhere near complete. This is a teeny tiny slice of something that's a lot bigger. A lot bigger.
And that's a good point that you bring up with Inner Traditions is that even the, you know, working with them for so long, they're more than willing to listen to their authors, you know, and take their advice in what's going on and say, hold the train here. There's more, you know, it's not this simple, you know, and that's, I'm a big fan of Inner Traditions. They provide a lot of good information to a lot of people, and they publish a lot of good authors out there with information that you're not going to hear in the mainstream. And that's my big thing is that, you know, this isn't going to be caught on the nightly news. You know, no one's got it because they're busy. Mainstream Christian faiths are busy trying to demonize, you know, these kind of things into, you know, calling it voodoo and calling it anything but, you know, what their centric view of everything is going to be. And as we know, that doesn't get you very far in life, you know, keeping that kind of narrow mind, you know.
It was really a long journey finding Inner Traditions as a publisher.
Really?
I don't want to name the ones that I had approached before them, but each publisher I queried wanted to do really bizarre, sensationalistic things.
Yes.
Or they wanted to water it down so it would, you know, apply to the masses. And I was like, this doesn't apply to the masses. This is a very specific niche. Mm-hmm. And ITI was the only publisher that listened and helped me work to create and open up that niche and create my own market. That in itself was wonderful, wonderful.
You know what, you hit on some very good things right there and some very important things for not only you and other authors like you that address issues that aren't mainstream is part of it. You, me, and everybody else aren't ever going to get 30, 40, 50 million listeners, you know, or... subscribers or you know, purchases or those kind of things, but you're hitting your people that want to hear what you want to hear, what you have to say, and you're hitting people that want to learn.
Exactly.
You know, and that's what's most important to me, actually, in just doing this kind of show, and I know it's important to you, because you don't let the fact that, you know, it's never going to be a movie of the week or, you know, anything like that get in your way of saying what needs to be said and putting out information that needs to be put out there, you know, and that's and that's the driving force, and that's the passion behind it all, I think, for everyone to be involved in these kind of fields.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Yes, and so, you know, that's something I kind of wrestle with a lot of people at work. I understand this is just a niche. You know, I understand I'm never going to get rich doing this, but that's not the goal. You know, it's always fulfilling something. It's about fulfilling that you wanted to do, you know, and if George Norrie on Coast to Coast can get 6 million listeners and that's the cap, basically, well, good for him, and maybe someday I'll do a weekend, you know? That's about it, because you can't replace the big dogs, right?
No, and it's important to get information into the hands where it needs to go.
Exactly, and not so much force it into people, right? Because that, of course, never works, you know?
It doesn't.
You can't force feed people.
It's nice to try, but you can't.
It just doesn't stick the same, right?
No.
They'll listen just long enough to get you out of their face kind of thing, right?
Yeah, and then just forget about you while they walk away.
Yep. Onto their iPod, right? onto the Facebook page, right?
Yep.
Your next book here that you did was Obi, Oracle of Cuban Santeria.
Yes. That was a fun book to write. I actually wrote that in 2 weeks, start to finish.
Yikes, there you go. Well, that must have been a breeze for you then, you know?
It was a breeze. It was 2 weeks of hyperactivity. I was working at a hospital. I was on a local hospital, and I got sick in that hospital. And I clocked out and went home and then didn't go back for my shift that night. And I said, oh, crap, what am I going to do with all my time? And I said, I know, I'll write another book.
Yeah.
And literally 2 weeks later, I had the manuscript done. And then I was like, what am I going to do next? So I went and found a new nursing job. It wasn't hard. But yeah, 2 weeks start to finish. Lots of coffee, very little sleep. And when I was done, I was like, wow, this went by really quickly. But that book, that would be Oracle of Cuban Santeria. And it's a real basic primer on another oracle that we have in the Lukumi faith, in the Santeria faith. And quite simply, it's the oracle that uses coconuts to speak to our orishas. But it's quite different the way we practice it than it is in Yoruba land, in the southwestern areas of Nigeria. When the slaves came to Cuba, when they were brought over in slavery, the way that they read Obi with the orishas was using a four-lobed kola nut. And they would praise on that, how that kola nut fell on the ground, the way the different pieces fell, they had the answer from the orishas sitting in front of them, plain sight. There was no question. But in Cuba, there was no kola nut. And when there was, it was very, very short supply. So they adapted, and this is one of the adaptations that was made in the New World. They took the coconut, which they already had tons of Batakis, sacred stories about the coconut, and they began to use that to replace the original kola nut oracle from Yoruba land. And it works quite well. And that book just focuses on that one narrow topic, from the patakis to the prayers to the meanings, the way the four coconut slices land. It's quite ingenious. There's no other divination system out there anywhere that works like what we use in the religion. It's unique, very unique.
Now, what kind of equivalent can people consider when you mention the orishas? Are they like angels? Are they kind of like jinn?
No, they're way beyond that.
Okay.
There's actually a lot of people tend to translate the word orisha as a goddess or a god.
Okay.
But that doesn't do the word, that doesn't give it the depth of meaning that it has in the Yoruba language. you have to understand that a lot of words in Yoruba and Lukumi, which is the old tongue of Yoruba that we speak, they're made up from other words, root words, much like the prefixes and suffixes that we use in English. But they have deeper meanings. Orisha comes from, it can be one of three words, Ori, which means a selected head, a consciousness. Well, Ori, which means a head, and Sa, which means selected or special or sacred. And so one way to look at the Orishas are that they are selected heads that have special skills or special talents. But there's another way to break it down, Ori, which is the Yoruba Lukumi word for head or consciousness, and Isa, which is a container for carrying water. And with Isa, you have other words in there, such as Isan Omi, the flowing or the ebb tide of the water to the sea. And one of our most sacred rituals that we do in this religion is actually the crowning of a new priest, a Yawo, a bride of the Orishas. And one of our ceremonies before this initiation happens is we have to go to the river. And there's certain secret, sacred ceremonies we do there that we can't really talk about because it's part of the actual priesthood process.
Okay.
But that river becomes sacred at that moment. And just like all the water in the world that falls in the earth goes running to the sea, it carries all of what we call the Eche, or the power of the divine grace in the world. And then the Yawo steps into that water and gets a secret from the river. And that goes into a special jar, and then the water from that river fills it. So they become part of a spiritual current that's flowing to the sea. Now, what's so special about the sea, you ask? We have an Odu in the Dilogun, Metanla Eyoko, that's the name of the Odu, that teaches us that God, whose name is Olodumare, exists in heaven at the bottom of a primordial sea as a huge, sacred, unbreakable stone. And so when you look at these words, Ori, Isa, and Isni, and you think about Olodumare, God, being this great stone at the bottom of the sea, and you think about how all the rivers are always flowing to the sea, then you begin to understand that the Orishas are very high, lofty states of consciousness. They're greater than goddesses or gods, and when we become their priest or their priestess, when they're installed in our heads, they carry us through this current of life, through this river of life, and they leave us at the feet of God when it's all over. So the Orishas, beyond being just quote-unquote gods or goddesses, they're states of consciousness, they're sacred rivers, they're the ebb tide flowing to the sea, carrying us back to God. And when you start to look at all that together, you get a better picture of what the Orishas actually are. At least I think you do.
Definitely. And yeah, I'm sorry if I sound completely ignorant when I ask some of these questions, but I'm more than willing to insert myself up on a T there for the sake of, you know, getting the information out there and you know what the heck's going on with some of these things that I don't know anything about, you know.
Exactly. You have to remember you're dealing with more than just a simple faith or a religion here. The Lukumi faith, the Lukumi religion, it's actually a culture, and you spend your whole life immersing yourself into this. And for everything you learn, there's a thousand more things to learn. You know,
yes.
People, when they think about Santeria, people that have read those little snippets in the newspaper or known somebody that was in the religion, seen them wearing those strange beads or seen them wearing white, you know, they think about, oh, they're the people that do the stuff with the chickens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's only such a small part of what we do, you know?
Yeah.
There's a whole culture behind this, and this culture has helped to frame and shape Latin American music, Latin American foods, Latin American dance, and now all that's coming out into the mainstream. So this very small spiritual thing that people, you know, they think it's small, is actually quite big, and it's influencing slowly every aspect of American culture and culture in other countries. It's everywhere. You just need to know what to look for.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. It's a little bit of life experience. It turned you on to a lot of the different things there. But yeah. I'm definitely glad you helped clear up with the Orishas, a mean to the faith, you know, to the practices and the rituals to you guys. And let's see, we got our next one is the Dilagoon book, pronounced right?
Yes, the Dilagoon.
Nice.
Yeah, some people just call it Big Red because it's big and it's red. I'm not kidding you.
That's true. Proverbs, Sacrifices, and Prohibitions of Cuban Santeria. Nice. Let's see.
I remember when Inner Traditions contracted for this one.
Uh-huh.
Again, they wanted to title it The Complete Dilagoon.
Yeah.
Just like the first book. And I wrote to my acquisitions editor and I said, we can't do this. This is still only a teeny tiny small part of what Dilagoon is. And I hear him writing back to me, well, just how big is this? And I say, well, I've been studying it since 89 and I still haven't exhausted it. And maybe about a year ago, because after this, I wrote a bunch of books about the, well, a couple of books, two books about the Patakis, the sacred stories. He asked me again, how long can you work this material without exhausting it? So I sent him a sample of my files. I sent him just, you know, between him and I sent him all my files on the family of Odu that we know as Odi. That's the name of that family, Odi. And he started reading it a year ago, and he still hasn't got more than an eighth, you know, through the material that I sent him. And he's like, okay, I understand now. It's big. It's big. Because there's another 16 families of Odu just like that one. So, yeah, we couldn't call this one complete either because it's still, I mean, what is it, 600 pages? And it's still so small. It just is like a survey of the most essential material that you would need to know.
Exactly. That's very true. And that's, I guess you've run into that aspect of the problem with a lot of the publishers or potential publishers that you've had before, where they sit and they try to put it in a box, you know, again, back to that mantra of let's just go ahead and label it and put it in a box and call it a day. And now we're done with this book. And what else do you have? You know?
Yeah.
And it's like,
just to be clear though, there's been no other publishers that I've approached since I came on board with ITI.
Yeah.
I'm so happy with them that I can't imagine leaving them. Now, that doesn't mean that along the way I haven't been headhunted.
Sure.
I even had somebody at Simon & Schuster try to get me on board. But no, I don't want to leave ITI. They're too good. They actually get the work that I'm trying to do.
Give you a lot of creative freedom.
Yeah. And it's nice to have somebody that wants to be true to the tradition or true to the practices.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I love having them on, having their people on and their authors on, because every one of them are just like, you know, are just like you, and that, you know, respect what they have researched and made their life at work, you know, and didn't get railroaded by the publisher. The publisher's well aware of these kind of aspects to their work.
Mm-hmm. We're just one big happy family.
There you go. There you go. Don't say that too loud. Then they will run roughshod. No. Let them know that they can never make you happy. No.
No, they know I'm happy. I'm very happy.
Then they take you for granted, right? No.
No, I don't have a problem with them. Mm-mm.
No, because they have a lot of people that fill those specific niches that aren't out there that a lot of the other ones won't take a chance on, you know.
Exactly.
They won't take a chance on.
Out there, like my work. There's nothing.
No.
Try to find something that's like my work. There's nothing out there.
Definitely.
Happy.
There you go. Well, that's good. I'm glad it has made you happy in doing these kind of things, because it's very rare that you actually find something that will make you happy for, you know, for the duration of your life, you know, well, on Earth, that is, right?
Yeah. And people ask me, they tell me, you're such a talented writer. Why don't you write stuff to a bigger audience? You know, why don't you write fiction? You tell wonderful stories. Why don't you work on novels? But years ago, before I even published my first book, I was at a tambour, and that's a drum party. That's where we go to talk to our gods, our Orishas.
Mm-hmm.
And at this drum party, one Orisha came down. Her name is Oya. She's the lady that stands between life and death. She's the one that released all the herbal secrets from the Orisha Osine into the world. She's the lady of the marketplace. Oya's fabulous. But she came down on one of her priestesses. And by come down, I mean literally took possession. The priestess was gone. Mm-hmm. Oya was there. And I had written my first book, but I was being really shy about looking for a publisher for it. And Oya read me the Riot Act. She's like, I gave you this work to do. Remember what I did to Osine. If you don't put your work out there in the world, I'm going to take this away from you and give it to someone else. And she gave me the pen name, Ochani Lele.
Yeah.
And she told me, tell the world you're my child. I'll protect you. So I did what she said, and I've been insanely happy with the results. I couldn't imagine using my talents for something secular or anything else. This is what I do, and this is what I want to do. And this is what the Orishas want me to do. I truly believe that.
That's an awesome segue right there. I was going to ask you where you got the name, Ochani Lele, and what exactly does it have a meaning behind it, or is
yes,
it just
it does.
A name?
It depends on how you break it down, like everything else in the Lukumi faith.
Sure.
But the meaning that I like the best is where you break it down, Ochani Lele. And I know that pronunciation is real subtle in the difference, but it means the Orisha of the wind. And Oya is the lady who controls the air and controls the wind and controls the breath. So it kind of fits in with that, the Orisha of the wind. And it's also a nice way of saying I'm an airhead, which I am, let's face it. But what was so funny about the pen name was years later, I was at a friend's house, and we have a custom where we pull down, each Ile Ocha pulls down an Odu, a letter, a reading for the coming year, using the Dilibun. And she put this paper in front of my face and said, this is our Ile reading for the year. What do you think of this? And I looked at the top of the page, and it says, Letter of the Year 2004, for Ochani Le. And the woman whose Oya had come down and told me to call myself Ochani Lele, her Ile is named Ochani Le, which means land of the Orishas, when that's translated. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Nice. That is a great synchronicity to it right there.
It is. It is.
That's for sure. That lets you know you're on the right track, right?
It does.
That's for sure. You get little hints like that dropped on you every day in life, and a lot of people don't pay attention to it or have been programmed to not pay attention to it and just simply mm-hmm. call it coincidence, you know?
And you know you're on the right path when that stuff keeps happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so I try to go out of my way to tell people, you know, about those kind of things, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, don't you get it? Doesn't it seem weird that when you think about something for a little bit and then all of a sudden someone calls you or, you know, mentions you, or you get a call and, you know, they say, oh, someone else mentioned you today about this time. And, you know, it's like I had one of those, that kind of synchronicity happened to me with Jeff Pritchett. Last week, I think it was, you know, they had one guy tell me, or I volunteered to go pick up some people downtown, and I was like, "Oh yeah, by the way, tell them hell's coming with me." You know, I gave him the old Tombstone, you know, line there from the movie, and the guy just kind of looked at me funny. I was like, "What? You've never seen Tombstone, right?" And he's like, "No." I was like, "Jesus, you
That's
need
funny.
To watch it," you know. So, and then later on in the day, I see this post that Jeff put up on his Church of Mavis site, that, you know, mm-hmm. one of his multiple Facebook pages there, and he's got a picture of Kurt Russell saying, "Tell him hell's coming with me." I was like, "Oh my God!" I was like, "This is crazy. This just happened earlier today,"
mm-hmm.
you know. And he kind of, you know, he jokes around with me and stuff. He's like, "Oh, we need to hug now," and all this stuff. I was like, classic.
Why do you keep bringing up Church of Mavis? I don't want to like out anybody because people like to keep their own counsel about the spiritual things. But there's quintetos involved with that. With the Church of Mavis. Yes, there are.
Yeah, he let me in a long time ago when I started doing this about when I used to do interviews with him back when we were on Blog Talk with him and Guy, and I'd come on and talk with him. He's like, you know, and we'd be talking, you know, privately in chats and on the phone and stuff like that. And he's like, you know, whatever you do, Chip, just don't, you know, don't let it get to you like it got me kind of thing. And at the time when he said it, I was like, oh, Jeff, get out of here. You know, you're just being dramatic or whatever, you know. But no, he's right, because in the aspects of the things you invite in on your show, you know, talking about the occult and any kind of Luciferian type stuff, and the darker aspects of everything that people, you know, squirm at, that you try to get out there to people, you know, it will take a hold of you, and it will twist your life around on you if you don't watch it, you know. And people need to understand that it's not just lip service when someone tells you to be careful, you know. And I'll remember that, you know. I hate to say I'll never forget. I like to say elder, you know. Right. And you know, it's just a little nuance to it. But yeah, I'll always remember him saying, you know, don't let it get, you know, bring you down like it did me. And then he went into having some very hard times financially and relationship wise, and you know, it got him hard in the last 6 months, I'd say.
Wow.
You know, if not more. But he's getting through it, and you know, he's kind of gotten away from a lot of those kind of topics on his show, so he's kind of kept the spotlight of negativity, if you will, you know, away from him, and and he's turning around, you know. And that's not to say that, you know, you don't get burned out from these kind of things. I'm sure you get burned out sometimes, you know, whether it be...
A little bit.
Yeah, just every once in a while, you know, you get these little downturns, you know. And I've gotten the same way, where, you know, you kind of sit back and rest on your laurels, so to speak, and let it all do itself, you know, for a while, and then you finally got to, you know, get back up and start kicking it in the rear end a little bit more, and do what got you here, you know, instead of resting back on it. But that's life, though.
Yeah, you know? Sometimes you have to be careful where you shine your light, because if you shine your light on darkness, whose light is on you? You know, you turn that light away from yourself and shine on somebody else. And while you're lighting that up, you yourself are sitting in darkness. You have to be careful with your light. You have to be careful.
That's very good advice right there, actually. Be careful where you shine your light, you know, because it will, you know, so a lot of people like to say that the light of day is the best antiseptic. Well, you know, that light is also going to bring to the forefront a lot of things, a lot of nasty things that nobody wants to talk about, you know.
Exactly.
Joke. Yes, definitely. That's good, because it's been a while. You know, what I always like to say is that, you know, sometimes I'll have guests on that I think will be, you know, just big names and all this kind of stuff, and then it never really gets, you know, to be as good as it should. But it seems like when I get certain other guests, you know, and you just have, you know, just have a good conversation, for God's sakes, you know.
That's the most fun.
Just get down and have a good conversation. Don't be scripted, and not an interrogation. Just have a conversation, you know. And that's why I like to try to keep a lot of things with guests.
Never really know anyone until you talk to them spontaneously. I mean, gosh. Let's not even talk about all the New Age craziness that's out there. Since I started writing in 2000, I have met dozens and dozens and dozens of quote-unquote spiritual authors. And you read their books, and their books are all nice, and their books are pretty, and the books make you feel good. But then you meet them in person? Oh, my God. And you talk to them, and they are the most vulgar and vile. Oh, let me stop. But just because somebody writes a really nice book doesn't mean they're a nice person. And I hate to say it, but you need to take books, especially New Age books and self-help books, with a grain of salt.
Definitely.
Because you never really know if the person that wrote it really means what they've said, or if they've really experienced what they say they experienced, or if they just wrote it for a quick buck.
Yep.
And there's a lot of that out there. There is a lot of that out
there. Damn right there is. You know, that seems to be the mantra of a lot of, like, paranormal or ufology aspects of everything these days is, you know, there's some aspects to it where everyone says, well, you just wrote this to get rich quick, and I'm, you know, and then I'm quick to say, well, if this is your best idea on how to get rich, go back to the drawing board, you know, because that's not going to cut the cheese, you know. And then there's other aspects of it that, you know, a lot of the individuals do it just because they're pure ego-driven and want to try to grasp at whatever kind of aspect of fame they want to run with, you know. And that's fine for some individuals, but like you said, you definitely got to consider, you know, why did this individual write the book that they wrote, you know, and what are they offering that's different that you haven't heard before that not only can be different, but also feasible, because anybody can write different, you know, and call it fiction.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. There's so much smoke and mirrors out there with the spiritual book world, you know, but eventually the mirrors crack, the smoke clears. It's not pretty. You know, just because you're involved in something spiritual, whether it's this religion or anything else that's out there, you have to remember, spirituality does not tell you to lose your common sense. People, if it sounds too good to be true, or if it doesn't feel right, don't follow it blindly. Chances are it's not right, or it's not right for you. You know? Use your common sense. Use your common sense.
And don't let anybody try to tell you your common sense is wrong, too, because that's another aspect of the whole deal is like, you know, I'll hear goofy things and I'll be like, well, that just doesn't sound right. Well, where's your proof? I don't need proof, you know. I just know that sounds wrong, you know. Come on. And you're talking to a... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
And you're talking to a guy who is willing to entertain a lot, you know.
You know, the thing about opinions at the beginning of the show, everybody has one.
Yeah, well, not only that, but you should be listening to a certain show and a host to hear what their opinion on the topic is, not just take it verbatim and keep rolling on and treat it solely as entertainment, you know? It's like, you know, have something to say about the topic, for God's sakes. And, you know, and if, you know, I've done a lot of stuff about Iroquois Indian religious practices, too, and when I have these kind of things that are completely foreign to me on the show, I get out of the way, you know, because my opinion's going to be ignorant, you know, for lack of a better word. So it's like,
and
wait till towards the end.
It's good that you admit that. Not a lot of people would say that.
Yeah, that's another huge thing with a lot of these shows is like, just say you don't know, you know, for God's sakes, just say you don't know everything. It's cool, you know, don't worry. Yes.
And when you realize that you're ignorant about something, you can then set out to find the knowledge you lack.
Perfect. You know, and that's a perfect way to set up our break here. We're going to take about a 10-minute break, Ochani, and let's go ahead and take our break, Joe, and you can catch or you can grab all of Ochani Lele's books at Inner Traditions and Bear and Company. His latest is, let's see.
Sacrificial Ceremonies of Santeria.
Yes. There you
That's
go.
Mouthful.
Definitely. You can pick that up at Amazon, and you can find him on Facebook and Twitter, Ochani Lele. Just look him up. And we will be back in about 10 minutes, Ochani, and we will be back to discuss the rest of your works and, of course, your latest, greatest Sacrificial Ceremonies of Santeria.
You did that so well.
I've almost done it a couple times, you know.
I will educate you by the end of the show, I promise.
It's a work in progress, right?
It is.
Thank you. And Joe, go ahead and take us away.
I'm everyone. This is Second Sight NYC. You can join us each Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
We're a parapsychic radio show that isn't afraid to push the limits.
We have limits?
Well, if we do, we haven't found them yet.
Chris is the godfather of psychic mediums, and he'll give you a reading you can't refuse.
You better believe it. And Stephanie is the co-hostess with the mostest.
Relax there, Chris.
Yeah, okay. Second Sight NYC is the show that even the spirits listen to.
How could you make such a claim?
Well, the spirits told me. Give us 2 hours to open your minds to the possibilities of what could be.
This show is all about what is seen and unseen, known and unknown, and everything in between.
Each week, we make the unbelievable believable.
Join us.
Hi, this is Robson, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
From 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, as we delve into UFOs, abduction, ghosts, aliens, conspiracy, cryptozoology.
And don't forget those creepy topics you will hear in your local news.
That's the Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
Are you a fan of the unknown?
Do you constantly watch the sky, wondering if there's something out there?
Do you fear of things going bump in the night?
This Press Radio brings you headfirst into the world of the paranormal with the latest news and interviews with the paranormal elite.
With Jordan Klein and Nick Queen, you are sure to be consumed in the world of ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, and conspiracy theories and the unknown.
So check out Whispers Radio every Tuesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Central. And give us a call, 1-866-514-1600.
Visit us at www.whispersradio.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montalgo, we co-host a new show called News on the Flip Side. You can catch us every Saturday night, 8 p.m. Central, where we will be discussing current events and topics going on in the world today. We have opinions on everything. There's no topic that we won't discuss, and we'll go places that other shows wouldn't dare. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can catch it here, News on the Flip Side, only on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello, everyone. Trish Sheridan, host of A Global Focus. Come join us each Friday evening. We'll focus this new time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Come join the discussion.
Hey, hi there. Got your attention? I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious what you were doing from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. See, I host this really interesting little radio program that airs live then, and we bring in all sorts of guests. Authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.giascott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Hi, everyone. I'm psychic medium Christopher George, and I have a new show that will air the first Friday of every month from 11 to midnight Eastern Standard Time. The show is called Insight with psychic medium Christopher George. It's all about psychic readings. I welcome my listeners to call in for a free reading. Just remember, don't ask me a question that you really don't want the answer to. I'll give it to you the way the spirits give it to me. Straightforward and real. The first Friday of every month. Insight, 11 to midnight.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern,
with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. I'm psychic medium Christopher George, and I have a new show that will air the first Friday of every month from 11 to midnight Eastern Standard Time. The show is called Insight with psychic medium Christopher George. It's all about psychic readings. I welcome my listeners to call in for a free reading. Just remember, don't ask me a question that you really don't want the answer to. I'll give it to you the way the spirits give it to me. Straightforward and real. First Friday of every month. Insight, 11 to midnight.
To UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Ships of an alien source are approaching from the sky. Radio contact has been attempted but cannot be established. Instructions are to prepare for an attack by an unknown enemy.
Your host, Chip and Nicole. The phone is 504-273-7379. You can ask our guests any of your questions or give us feedback. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and visit our website, mindcemetery.com, for shows, news, and blogs.
Yes, thank you. We are back live on Monday night here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, and I am joined tonight by our guest, Otani Lilay, author of...
Sacrificial Ceremonies of Santeria.
Boom, right there. Nice. And we have...
Come on, say it one time.
Sacrificial Ceremonies of Santeria.
That was perfect.
There you go. And we do... first of all, I'm rolling solo tonight here. Nicole is not with us tonight, so bear with me for a little bit. I'm sure we'll make it without the world's favorite skeptic / denier. Except this one, she doesn't really have a whole lot to be skeptical of or deny, you know, because it obviously is something that, yes, cop in the chat room, she's fired again temporarily. We'll see if she acts right next week. We can get back on here. There you go. We had some callers early on coming in here, and I'd like to see if they'd like to call back in for the second hour here and ask their favorite author here some questions about Santeria and any other topics they want to cover. Basically, that phone number is 1-504-273-7379. Anybody in the chat room wants to call in, ask me or Connie Lillet some questions, be my guest. And we'll throw that number out there again at the bottom of the hour, I guess they call it out there in Radio Land. So we'll see what we can get. You know, the chat room is hopping again, as usual, with good topics and good discussions and good guests. So, again, thank you, Otani, for joining us tonight and discussing your lifelong work here and educating these fools. No,
they're not fools. They're truth seekers.
There you go.
They are.
Hopefully, right? Yeah. but the next book that you had put out that we were covering was what in 2010? Wow, yep. Yeah, there you go. Let's see, the teachings of Santeria of the Santeria gods, the spirit mm-hmm. of Odu, right?
Yes.
Fantastic.
That book took a long time. Well, let me explain what happened between 2003 and 2010.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a quest to be a better writer.
Okay.
And I decided that the next thing I wanted to focus on were the actual stories. Because we're a faith of stories and storytellers. And these stories are just as old as the human race. You know, thousands and thousands and thousands of years old. And at that time, I mean, my writing was good, but it wasn't the best. And I really wanted to bring the stories to life. Maybe present them to a slightly larger audience. And to do that, I really had to work with myself. From the time I sent the manuscript in for the Dilawun, which I sent in 2002, until I sent the final manuscript at the beginning of 2010 for the book we're talking about now, Teachings of the Santeria Gods, I literally wrote and rewrote and wrote again hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stories until finally I felt that I had found, I don't know, my voice. Every writer, every storyteller has a voice, and you have to find that and bring it out on paper. And that's when I sat down and pulled my collection together. Now, to really understand this book, you have to understand that the Dilogun is divided into 16 Olodu. Those are like families of Olodu. They're like separate books. And within each book are 16 more Olodu. And these are the chapters of that book. So, Teachings of the Santeria Gods is divided in 12 chapters. There's a chapter on the Odu Okana, the Olodu Okana. There's one on Eyoko. There's one on Ogunda, Irosun, Oche, Obara, Odi, Unle, Osa, Ofun, Owani, and Eile Chibora. And that's probably like foreign language to the listeners, but it is. It's Lukumi.
It is what it is, right?
It is what it is. And those stories in that chapter, each chapter of that book, bring out what to me was the most important essence of each Odu. And what's great about those stories is if you read those stories and you really think about them, you kind of get that essence of what the religion is all about. It's through stories that we understand ourselves. We understand the world. And it's through stories that we really understand what it is to be Lukumi. And we understand what we're practicing, what we're worshiping, the culture that we're immersing ourselves into. Some of those stories I wrote from the aspect of the Odu itself, because for us, each of the Odu was mortal. It had a life on earth. Some were men, some were women. They came here to experience what this world was about. And the stories of their lives teach us about what it is to be human. Some of those chapters in that book I approached through other means, through other people, plays, dramas, intrigues that you can find inside the Odu itself. And again, those teach us about what it is to be human. Oh my gosh, one of the things you guys always do online on your show, well not always, mm-hmm. most of the time, is you talk about UFO phenomenon.
Sure.
Tomorrow, if the aliens came down out of the sky and came up to me and said, what does it mean to be human? I would take them to a library and take them to the fiction section. Because it's through fiction, it's through stories that we understand our humanity, our motivation. And anyone that really wants to understand the Lukumi faith needs to read about the stories and understand what it is to be an Odu or to be an Orisha or to be a practitioner of this faith. That's where we find the key to it all.
That's a good question right there, and it's such a mind-blowing one there when you not only would ever have to face the time where you talk to anybody, what does it mean to be human? Wow, you know. Wrap your heads around that one, listeners, for a little bit, and what do you say? Because you've got about 30 seconds or a minute to spit it out, you know? It's that kind of questions right there that really blow away minds, you know, and they should, and those should be the questions that are most worth answering, you know. I guess we have, Joe says we have a listener online here, or on the phone by the name of Stacy, that is in the queue. I know we're on a little bit of a delay, but let's see if we can get her to come in. Joe, can you go ahead and put her through?
Hello.
Hello, Stacy. Thanks for joining us here on the Mayan Cemetery.
Oh, thanks for having me on, and Ochni, bendición. I'm glad to be able to speak with you.
Santo, it's good to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm good, and I just want to say, you know I can only speak for myself, but a lot of people in the community were very grateful to have an author like him to be writing and representing the community, and I've been enjoying the show, both the questions and conversation and the depth of wisdom that he speaks with. So just a lot of gratitude.
Oh, well, Stacy, thank you. Thank you, authors. We're lonely creatures. We spend hours, day after day, bent over our keyboards. So it's always good to hear from people and hear how I work them.
Yeah.
I'm glad you like my work. That's okay. That's okay.
Like you said, you know, there's just very few authors from our community and religion that could portray the religion accurately and put it in the right light. So many people look forward to his books. And I was curious, what is your next project that you're going to work on?
Okay, well, you know, right now the newest book is Sacrificial Ceremonies of Santeria. Mm-hmm. But I just, contracted, but I signed the contracts back in February. I'm working on a book about Osogbo, the spirit of misfortune in Lukumi belief. And for those of you listening that don't know what Osogbo is, we have a different worldview when it comes to good and evil. We don't believe in absolute good and absolute evil. We believe in a world of Ire, blessings, or Osogbo, misfortune. And to us, misfortune isn't just an abstract concept. We have spiritual entities that rule over these misfortunes, such as Iku, the spirit of death, Ano, the spirit of sickness, Aro, the spirit of durative illness, which is tragedy, Areye, which is wickedness, etc., etc., etc. And we have stories about these creatures. And if you want to understand how to overcome Osogbo and maintain Ire, blessings, then, like I already mentioned, you need to know their stories and how to work with them and work around them and get them out of your life. That's my next project. And that will be out in September of 2013.
Wow. I think that would be helpful to people, because I know when I first came upon this tradition, what set it apart is, you know, for anyone who's used to going to, if you want to say, readers or proclaimed psychics and their divination systems, it's like going to a doctor that says, right, your arm's broken. This is, you know, like, this is what's happened. Yeah, sorry to hear about that. Good luck. Or when you go and you see on the paranormal shows, yeah, you have a spirit here. All right, well, now we're going. But in this tradition, you get the solutions.
And I don't mean to laugh, but how true is that? How true is that? What if you went to a doctor and he said, your arm is broken, I have no idea what to do? And so many people, Stacy, they go to diviners, psychics, and they're told what's up, but they're not told how to fix it. And isn't that one of the things that's great about our, we're told what's wrong, what's off, and then we're told what ebo we have to make to help fix things.
And that's what amazed me with this tradition. Not only was I told everything that was going on, but how to fix it or how to prevent it or, you know, the remedy to things. Why go to, you know, why find out what's going on or what's going to happen if you can't change it or fix it or know these things? And I think, like I said, the same could be applied with the paranormal shows, and that's why, you know, we have the solutions in our tradition for those as well. And I'm actually trying to get some people together to try to apply this to that realm, because I'm just tired of seeing people hurting themselves and others on these shows, and they don't know how to get rid of things, and then things come on them. So that book you're writing, I think people really need that book to understand.
And I'm still floored by your analogy. That was brilliant. Did you come up with that by yourself?
Yeah. Occasionally, I'm good at one-liners.
I like that. Stacy, can I put you on the spot?
Hey, why not?
A little spot, I promise. Which of my books is your favorite book?
So far, the one about Obi.
About Obi. So you're reading Obi, Oracle of Cuba, New York?
Yeah, I figured that was a good starting point. I haven't read as much as I should because I'm doing my master's degree program now, and that's pretty heavy reading. But so far, I like that book, and I have your De La Goon book as well.
Big Red. Everybody calls that Big Red.
It's Big Red. But I definitely look forward to reading your new book, and I was curious, you know, what we can expect in the book or what are some of the things that you cover in there.
Oh, well, the book is actually, it's quite expansive. It starts off with an overview of what sacrifice really is in the religion. And, I mean, everything we do is a sacrifice. Everything we do is an ebo. And it discusses that a little bit and talks about some of the misconceptions and it does some etymology of the different words so people can really understand what we're saying when we say we give a bale orisha. You know, it's more than just giving a chicken. There's a whole lot to what's going on. It has a chapter that's dedicated to Olodo Mare and the orishas, breaking down the names and talking about the philosophy of orisha worship. And then I've got 1, 2, 3 chapters dedicated to Lukumi history, where we come from, where we're going. And then after that, there's 2 chapters actually dedicated to the ritual and the process of sacrifice. And finally, because I'm so into storytelling, the final chapter in the book has a small collection of papakis, of stories that explain why we do things the way we do and where all this comes from. But I think since you're actually in the religion, the thing you might like the most about the book is as I'm talking about the steps that are used in the sacrificial ritual, I talk about the reason, what it actually means, depending on your intention. And I also talk about the Odu, the Dilugun, from which everything comes, because we don't do what we do without reason. Everything has a reason. The key is finding that reason and the stories behind it and the spiritual meaning behind it. But that's the new book.
I look forward to reading it, and I don't want to selfishly take up the airtime here, but I wanted to call in and out, you know, your new project and what's to come, and just that I'm enjoying this show very much, and I'm going to tune in more in the future. I like the topics that you guys are talking about and that, you know, you don't leave any stone unturned.
Isn't the show wonderful?
Yeah. It's so rare to find open-minded people. You know?
No, and I was sampling the past few days. I've been sampling the past episodes, and the stuff they cover just blows me away. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, and Stacy, thanks for calling. And by the way, I think you're our first caller on this show since we've been on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Really?
Yeah, we hadn't really
often.
We hadn't really opened it up to too much, but you. You're on point. You're right on it, and a hell of a segue, by the way.
I used to do radio shows.
Nice. There you go.
So, but, you know, I tune into this one. Really, there's only 2 I listen to, this and H2O Network, and because so many, they become so humdrum, and they keep you in this little box.
Yeah.
We got to get out of that box and really open your minds up. And so many people, they're dogmatic, and, you know, if you don't agree with someone's opinion, then they make you their enemy, and I think the problem in this world is people being so dogmatic about their opinions and causing separation amongst themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are just, it's great that you cover so many topics and nothing's, you know, taboo. We need to open up that communication and really delve into these things.
Sweet. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you again for having me.
No problem.
Bye.
Hopefully we won't let you down.
Oh, you haven't so far, and I hope he continues writing because our community needs that, these books, and to have this knowledge out there for other people to understand and not just blindly judge based off of, well, I heard this about them, this and that.
Yeah.
It's like, no, have you ever met the people? What do you know about it? And unfortunately, not too many people are willing to read or be around people. They want to make blind judgments, but we're definitely appreciative to have him just speaking, you know, from the community.
Thank you.
I've got one question for you, Stacy. When did you get involved in everything? And I'll kick it back to Ochani after you get done here. When did you get involved with the religion and everything?
That was back in January of 2006. I got a divination done, and I was just blown away by how accurate it was and detailed. And even more so than that, that they could prescribe, okay, but here's the problem, but you need to do this, and this will fix this, and then this is how you can prevent it. No other divination system provides that in such detail and depth that is that spot on, and how to solve things. I said, all right, I want what this person has. The books are right there, and, you know, one thing led to another. I got pulled in, and it has changed my life, and I owe a lot to the tradition and the Orishas. It's changed me as a person for the better. So that's
fantastic.
How I got started.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic. What it's all about. It's about evolution. And if you're in the right place and you're with the right people, magic happens. It just happens.
It's very real. And there's very few traditions where you can get in there and say, you know, where you get that response from, if you want to say the divine or the other side, most is you're praying and you're hoping somebody's listening and you hope for the best. You read the book and, all right, thanks for coming out. But here it's like you get the response back and there's no denying that you were heard and something's there. That's what makes the difference. And the only other tradition I've seen that with is with the Native American or, you know, the indigenous tradition. That's very real as well, but that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for coming on tonight, Stacey, and calling
care.
Up. No problem. Great caller and very well informed, and I'm glad that she was able to get up with you, Ochani, and give the opportunity to hear from one of your fans, you know?
Yeah, that's very nice.
Live and without a net, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, and that's something that I'd like to incorporate a little more here later on in the show and try to get it going a little more. And I'm going to flip that question back to you about when did you get involved with Santeria, I guess it is. Is that the proper way to call it? I mean...
Yeah, you can refer to it as Santeria, but when the term was first created in Cuba, it was somewhat of a racial slur.
Okay.
You know, we call ourselves Olorishas. We are the owners of the Orishas, and we call ourselves Lukumi Priest, and we prefer to be called Lukumi. But Santeria, a lot still cling to that. Mm-hmm. Myself included, because it can be empowering. It's like, yeah, call us what you will, but this is what we are, and we're proud of it.
Right.
There
you
go.
Know? But how did I become involved? It's such a long story, such a long story.
Well, you know what that means? That always means it's juicy. You know, it's like, you know, I had somebody say to me, hey, what's your story? I was like, God, Jesus, where do you want me to start, you know?
Yeah. Yes, it kind of snuck up on me. You know, it was back in the late 80s, early 90s, and newspapers were on fire with the case of the Church of the Lukumi Babaluaye versus the city of Hialeah, mm-hmm. which was a big Supreme Court case that was coming up. You know, oh my God, back in those days, if there was a ritual going on, if a new priest was being made, simply because they had animals there waiting to be sacrificed, okay? And this isn't something that's done just for, you know, the fun of it. There's a reason for it. The blood feeds the Orishas, and the death of the animal, the meat, feeds us. It's about feeding. It's about nourishment.
Okay.
And it's about humanity. It's not some torture ceremony. Like
yeah.
these crazy people in the media, yellow journalists, like to sensationalize.
Yes.
But if you had animals at your house, you could even have a single chicken because you're going to feed one Orisha and then you're going to make chicken and yellow rice, you know?
Okay.
Especially in Dade County, Miami, entire SWAT teams would show up at people's houses. It was insane.
Wow.
You know? But
that's
also
a good point that you bring up about the sacrifice aspect to it, and that's what a lot of people don't understand. It's not just a bloodlust thing. You know, it's about, you know, sufficing the Orisha
mm-hmm.
and feeding yourselves that participated in it. Nothing's going to waste.
No, and it's humane slaughter. I mean, you see stuff in the papers about people torturing animals. We don't sit there and torture our animals. You know, number one, that wouldn't be healthy. The meat wouldn't be good for you. All the stress hormones.
Yes.
Most of us use animals that have been raised on organic farms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The animals are killed with one slice of the knife.
Yep.
The carotid arteries are cut. Unconsciousness comes, I think it's 10 seconds.
Yep.
You know, some birds have four carotids, but we teach each other how we properly cut the arteries so that the bird doesn't suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a celebration. You know, everything on earth has its purpose, according to Lukumi and Yoruba beliefs. And when it comes to animals, oh my gosh, these animal rights people, animals aren't people, you know,
exactly.
Animals don't have rights.
We
should be concerned with their welfare. And Olodumare, God, put everything on this earth with a purpose. Some animals are companions, and I have three dogs and one cat. Spoiled. I love my animals. You know, some animals were put here to be food, and we've domesticated them agriculturally, you know, for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
Since, you know, even the days that we were nomads, we did this. Some animals are predators, some animals are prey, some animals are pretty. Everything has its purpose. And when it comes time to take an animal life and feed the orishas and feed ourselves, we do it with reverence. So people, if you read all this crazy stuff in the newspapers, realize it's crazy stuff. There's no animal torture. None. It's done with humanity. It's done with reverence.
Yeah, and that's the overall mantra, I guess, of the Christian base that wants to try to, you know, vilify your practices because it's not the same as theirs. You know, it's all very calculated. You know, it's very thought out. You know, it's different. Get rid of it. You know, it's very simple.
Well, actually, you know, let's call it for what it is. Basically, if it comes out of Africa from black people, it can't be anything good. Face
true.
It. Call it for what it is. Call it for what it is.
Just like this old, you know, marijuana scares, you know, back in the 30s and
40s. In
the 40s
1920s and 30s, yes.
Yeah.
That was racially motivated. You're very correct.
100% racially motivated. You know, those crazy Mexicans coming up, and God knows what it'll do to these colored folks, you know, and all that craziness.
Taping our white daughters.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. Well, you know, bullshit. I would say you can't rape the willing, so. Jeez.
You're so bad.
Don't tell that to the RNC, no?
Yeah. You're so bad.
But are there different animals that are used for different orishas?
Yes, every orisha has their own animals that they like.
Okay.
Like a legua, he prefers all goats, roosters, and chickens. A lot of your female orishas, like Ochun, who's the goddess of love, fertility, abundance, she likes castrated goats, castrated male goats. They're castrated, like, when they're young, before the ceremony. And she likes hens. She likes quails. Yamaya eats ram. She also eats roosters. There's some lineages of the religion that feed her pigeons. Chango, he eats ram. He eats guinea hen. Every orisha has its own preferences. But please note, contrary to what some of these newspapers are reporting today and the animal rights movements, we do not sacrifice cats. You know, I would kill somebody before I let them put their hands on my cat.
Yeah.
We don't sacrifice dogs.
Yeah.
You know, we don't sacrifice your pet horse. These are food animals. It's about nourishment.
Mm-hmm.
Nourishment of the orishas, nourishment of the human body, nourishment of the human soul. It's about hallowing our base natures. And let's face it, we have to eat. We have to eat. And we're designed to be omnivores, you know? And it's about that, reaching out to the divine with it, making it something special, making it sacred.
Now, when the caller mentioned she went through a divination, I guess it's called, right? Okay.
Yes.
Can you explain that process? And what happens with that when, like, a new initiate or convert or member, I'm not sure how you'd like to phrase that. Just explain what that is all about.
Yes, divination is a very practical part of our religion. And it's also an act of worship. It's an actual ritual that happens between a priest or a priestess who is a diviner and then their client, who can be simply a client. Because some people come to the religion not because they want to be a part of it, but because life is hard. And they know that we have the ecce, the power, to solve problems. You know, we don't like to approach the religion as a problem-solving mechanism, but there are some people that come to that, for that, come to us for this. They have problems. Life is hard. They want to know how to fix it. And during this ritual of divination, we pray to the divine. Our aura consists of cowrie shells. Most diviners read with Allegra's shells, and he has 21 cowrie shells in a set, but only 16 are used, because we have 16 families of Oddu, and then 256 children among them. The diviner, using Allegra's shells, which are Allegra's spirit, we cast an Oddu on the mat, a composite, and this addresses a very specific chapter in the Book of the Dilogun. And from that, we have proverbs, patakis, meanings, ebos, which are offerings or sacrifices, which very rarely actually revolve around animals. Usually it's cooked foods, fruits, prayers, candles, flowers, things like that. And this Oddu kind of, it designates exactly what the client's problem is. It's kind of like when you go to the doctor with a headache and the doctor says, well, you actually have spinal meningitis, you know.
Yikes.
But you go to the diviner with a problem and the diviner says, that problem is only a symptom of something. You're coming because you're a little bit depressed. And the diviner says, what's actually affecting you is the death of your mother when you were 6 years old. And then the diviner tells you how to address that. Number one, this Oddu says you need to get therapy. Number two, you need to go visit your mother's grave and put flowers on it. Number three, you need to admit that there is, yes, life after death, and you need to interact with your ancestors. And this is just a quick example off the top of my head. But it tells you what you have to do to find your balance, to find your equilibrium. And of course, we tell stories at the mat. These stories and these characters and these themes and these plots are universal. And when we tell these stories, the client finds himself as a character in one of these stories. And suddenly, the world seems to make sense. They leave with solutions to their problems. When they sit on my mat for divination, they leave with consults, like for other therapists or doctors or, you know, whatever it is they need, emotionally, spiritually, physically. And they leave with a prescription we call it bo, which is something to the Orishas with, or to the ancestors with, to create that energy exchange, to get that divine conversation started. And with all that, miracles happen. There's healing, spiritually, physically, emotionally, psychologically. That's what Stacy was talking about when she talked about we have the solution for actual problems that we see.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of addressing the problem, you think you're bringing to the diviner, and you think you're bringing to the Orishas. The Orishas go deeper with the Oddu, and they tell you what the root of your problem is and how that affects your whole being.
Nice. So it's in the shells, you said, that they use, that through reading the shells and,
yes,
and the experience with that, that they tell people.
You know, when we're sitting on the mat and we're divining, it's not like we're reading tea leaves or reading cards or even reading the smoke from a cigar or looking into a crystal ball.
Yes.
These Oddu have meanings. And based on how everything comes at the mat, we know exactly what part of that chapter to read in our minds, and we know what it is the Orishas want from us or for us. So it's not really a psychic process. Okay. Practical.
Good, good. Nice. And I hate to relate that to something I've seen in a movie. And
uh-oh, what movie?
With voodoo. Actually, a pretty bad movie, Predator 2.
I never saw that.
Okay, well, good. It wasn't too swift, but it got the job done, right?
It showed
a voodoo priest that was throwing chicken bones or throwing bones.
No, chicken bones.
Nothing like that?
Nothing like that.
Okay, good, because when you mentioned the shells...
You know the shells that were used for money at one time?
Yeah.
That's what we use.
Okay, good.
That's what we use.
And I think that's a
I think voodoo gets lumped in with you, you know, and it helps vilify you.
Religion, it's a separate religion, and it's beautiful. And, okay. You know, what I know about voodoo could actually fill up maybe 5 handwritten pages. But, you know, just from what I've read and from what I've seen, and then what I see in certain movies or TV shows, the models, they're all wrong, you know?
Yeah.
You really want to learn about voodoo, look for a practitioner. Learn the real thing. Don't pay attention to what you see in the movies or on TV, because as we all know, it's mostly wrong.
Yeah, it's there for the show and not a lot of no, right?
Right.
So there's no, so to clear it up for everybody out there, there's no zombies, there's no craziness like that involved in with the Orisha and Santeria and everything.
No.
It's okay, cool. Because, again, like I said, that's some very easy things that are slapped in there, you know, with Santeria, and they put it all under the same umbrella just to categorize everything to make it simple, you know?
It's all that same yellow journalism.
Mm-hmm. Ugh, yellow journalists. Yeah, man, I can't stand that kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm. It's classic. It's easy. It's lazy is what it is.
It's
you know?
Disrespectful.
Yeah.
It's racist, you know?
Easily.
I hate to bring up that R word, but call it for what it is. It goes back to the fact that, oh my goodness, nothing good could come out of Africa. You know, it's racist. It's wrong to think like that.
There you go. And you're talking about the 1993 U.S. Supreme Court battle there, trying to get Santeria officially recognized as a religion, right?
Yes, because the city of Hialeah, Florida, was writing statutes that specifically forbade the practice of Santeria and animal sacrifice within their city limits.
Mm. To think that it took till 1993.
Yeah, it took years for CLBA and Ernesto Pichardo, though, to fight this all the way up to the Supreme Court. Years.
Yeah, 19 years in, you know, ago that happened. And it's crazy.
And it's shameful that anyone would have to go through the court system just to validate their religion and their practices.
Especially when you sit back and you... you know, and you start getting to the nitty gritty about like Scientology and some of these other religions that are out there, just pure nonsense, you know. And I'm sorry, folks, but Scientology is pure nonsense. I'm sure we have probably one Scientologist listener here, but, you know, but sorry, you're wasting your time because anytime you have to pay more money to get a better seat, you know.
Uh-huh.
Where is the light bulb in your head saying this is wrong?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, they still have the same rights the rest of us do.
Yes, yeah, and that's what's incredible that got more attention before Santeria did, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, no surprise. But I want to give the phone number out again here and see if we can pick someone up at the last for the last little bit. It is 1-504-273-7379. That's 504-273-7379. If there's anybody out there who would like to get in touch with author Oshane Lulay and ask him any questions, and here's your opportunity to get a hold of individuals that you're not going to have access to on the wide scale and everyday basis that you may get. And I just like to have people take advantage of those opportunities when they come along, you know, because they
don't
have it every day.
I'm very approachable. I get a lot of fan mail, a lot of emails on a daily, weekly, monthly basis.
Cool.
Go ahead.
Tell everybody how they can get a hold of you.
Okay, you can find me on Facebook as Oshane Lulay. You can find me on Twitter as Oshane Lulay. And my email address, I have 2, but the one that I prefer to use is Oshane Lulay, simply because it's so easy to remember, @gmail.com. And I don't always answer right away, but usually within 2 or 3 days I get back to people. I'm very approachable. And of course you have access to my works. A lot of my books are in libraries. You can purchase them easily on BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com. And a lot of brick-and-mortar bookstores carry my works. You have to go to either their religion and philosophy sections or sometimes their New Age sections. or their Latin American studies section, sometimes the African sections. If you ask them at the front desk, they can direct you to the right place. And if they don't have it in stock, they almost always have it in their warehouse and can get it for you rather quickly. So lots of ways to get my work and read about the religion. And again, my latest book, it just came out, and it's selling like crazy. Sacrificial Ceremonies of Santeria, A Complete Guide to Its Rituals and Practices. And it's an honest, no hard look at our most sacred ceremony, and the one that causes the most controversy, the act of animal offerings.
Yeah, you know, that's something you brought up there is how people jump on that kind of thing. These are beasts of burden, and keep in mind, because it has a cute, cuddly face, doesn't mean it has a soul. Now, when I say has a soul, where does that fit in with
actually, we disagree.
Andrea?
We disagree. We believe okay. that every living thing has a soul.
Okay.
An essence of some type, which uh-huh. is why our rituals are so lengthy.
Okay.
When we actually practice animal offerings, there's a series of prayers, ritual actions, and songs that we sing.
Okay.
Not only to honor the Orisha that's being
fed. Your call
fed,
cannot be completed as dialed.
But
please
also,
check the number and dial again.
What is that? Anyway, but also to assist the consciousness, the soul of the animal, to go back to heaven so that okay. it can be reborn. Now, this is very important to us, and it's important to keep in mind that we believe even these animals that we sacrifice have souls. We don't treat them well and do things the way we're supposed to. What do you think we believe the animal's going to do when it goes to a Lokomare and reports on what was done? No, the Lukumi faith is a nature religion, and it teaches, and I'm glad you brought that up,
yeah.
it teaches that every living thing has a soul. And once we die, whether we die of natural causes or we're killed, or in the case of these animals, they're sacrificed to feed the Orishas and ourselves, that soul returns to heaven. It gives a report of what was done on earth. So that's important to keep in mind. Very important.
I'm glad I asked that question to you, and I'm glad that we separated the two there, because in my opinion, right now it sounds like, and I'm sorry we've got the phone ringing in the background, it sounds to me like you guys hold in higher regard the animal sacrifice than, say, a Christian religion would, because that's where I'm drawing my, you know, frame of reference and thoughts.
I'm sorry,
from
the person you're trying to reach has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
Thanks for that little message. I'll try to set up that voicemail later. I'm not sure which phone number I need, but like I was saying, you know, when I'm drawing from my aspect of it, it is, like I said, you know, I was always taught that they're beasts of burden here for us to use and don't worry about the soul and all that kind of, they don't have one and that kind of thing. Yeah. And here you have that same Christian base that vilifies you, you know, for the sacrifices, yet they have no idea how much high regard you're holding,
exactly.
you know, for that animal.
And exactly. And you know what? They say grace before they eat a meal. But our grace begins while the animal is still alive. Our grace and our prayers continue while the animal is being sacrificed humanely. And our grace continues while that animal is nourishing us in our physical forms. And I think that's important. If you look at the ritual from that aspect, and again, if you read the book, the very last chapter, everything is translated, everything is shown step by step, what we do, where it comes from, and why. The act of eating from the moment of selecting our animals is something done to hallow our physical nature, our need to eat, into something divine. Do other religions give that same respect? Not in my opinion.
No, not even close. And, well, I guess, guy from the chat room, Cop, says that Native American cultures, of course, give a lot of respect to their killings, sustenance, basically. And I guess we're taking faxes now on the Mayan cemetery. But So, I don't know what that fax number is, so, you know, stop trying. No.
Maybe it's something paranormal.
There you go. There you go. But yeah, that's a good point that, that he brought up, that, you know, those two, religions right there and viewpoints on, animal life, vastly different than the Christian based one that sits there and calls these things, you know, that vilifies these things, these two religions, which is just mind blowing to me, you know, now that we put it together, you know, now that you start piecing things together after, you know, conversing about these kind of things and airing it out, it doesn't make much sense at all, you know?
It doesn't. It really doesn't. And people today, they're so used to going to the grocery store and they buy these little packages of meat that are nicely cut and nicely sanitized, and it's so easy for them to forget that had a face. And if you ever go to a slaughterhouse, which I did years ago, and you see how those animals are slaughtered, mm-hmm. you wouldn't want to eat meat. Not very long. I'm also a firm believer, because I grew up on a homestead, in a homestead environment. I grew up in rural King George, Virginia. You know, we had the pigs, we had the chickens, we had the organic garden. Mm-hmm. But I've always been a firm believer that you should not eat what you cannot kill.
Yep. True. True. No sense in the excess right there. And, right. And there's something earlier you said about the quick dispatching of the animals and the sacrifice and how it doesn't spoil the meat. The same thing goes for a lot of hunters, you know, feel the same way too, because, you know, you gotta handle your business quick or the meat will get pumped with adrenaline, which will ruin the flavor.
That's hormones.
Yep.
It's very bad for you. It's very bad for you.
You know, and that's there's a lot of things that people out there that don't understand your religion with Santeria, and I know, God knows, I barely scratched the surface tonight in helping educate a lot of people, let alone myself.
No, you've done a good job. You've done well.
And I'm cool with the stupid question, you know, that's for sure. You kind of have to be in this business, but it's, you know, there's so many glaring hypocrisies and at the same time similarities with mm-hmm. everything that it's like, you know, the caller said earlier that you just have to be open enough to listen to these different things and yes. quit shutting things off and going to your cave, whichever form it may be, you know?
The world is a big place, and there's a lot of mysteries out there.
That's for sure. And this is, and we are in our last 2 minutes here. Go ahead and shoot out all your websites and where we can find all of your works.
Okay. Once again, you can find me on Facebook as Ochani Lele, on Twitter as Ochani Lele, and you can email me directly at ochanilele@gmail.com. My books are available Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. You can buy directly from the publisher, which is innertraditions.com. And you can find almost all of my books in most brick-and-mortar bookstores. If they're not in stock, they can get them from their warehouse rather quickly. Also, I do have a blog, which is slowly growing, ochanilele.wordpress.com. And those are all the places I'm on the internet.
There you go. And yeah, I've gotten word here from the producer that we've had said a huge listener tonight for you, Ochani. So you have definitely hit the nerve that a lot of people have been wanting to be hit, or, you know, you've scratched that itch for a lot of individuals, and I'm glad that I could bring on different people like yourselves to the light of day, so to speak, even though you've been out there for a long time. I know it's
a long time.
Very difficult to get the message out there and fight the tide of nonsense, you know?
It is. But you know what? This has been wonderful. I can't believe it's been 2 hours already.
Well, that's how you know it's a good time, when you barely, you know, when the time flies, right?
And it has flown. It feels like we just started.
I know, right? And it's definitely somebody I'd like to have come back on, so we can get a little deeper into a lot of these topics that you covered tonight and help hash out some of the definitions for a lot of things, like the divination. I'm glad we got into that, you know, and explained what that was all about for a lot of people, because I know you had some people looking at the looking at the computer like the dog listening to the phonograph there, you know, with the tilted head for huh? Or pretending they knew what was going on, right? A little smile and nod action always works.
Anytime. I'll come back anytime. This has been great. You're a wonderful cool. host.
Thank you very much. And that is our show for tonight with our guest Ochani Lele, and his latest greatest work is Sacrificial Ceremonies of Santeria, a complete guide to the rituals and practices. There you go. See, I had the right page tabbed up that time so I could go straight into it.
Yes. Yes, you have learned a lot tonight.
Yes, there you go. Thank you for coming on tonight, and we'll see everybody next week when we have, I don't know who I'm going to have on next week just yet. Let me see here. Let me check the calendar. I'm not sure if it's going to be a, let's just see real quick. Show calendar and guests from the main page there at mindcemetery.com. Next week we have Bob Curran, who's going to talk to us what's his name? Drawing a blank because he's stupid, folks. It's simple to go with that, right?
Funny.
You know, there's not a lot of room for BS, right?
That's
Let's see. We're going to talk about Celtic legends and lores, gods, fairies, monsters, ghosts of yore, and Cthulhu, and of course there is Aleister Crowley, our old friend. Like I said, we were going to dive into the dark sections again and get into the occult next week, and I haven't done it for a very long time, so we should have a good time there. And Bob is from the Big Island there in England, so it will be a 5-hour difference, I think. So, yeah, we'll be gentle with him. It'll be a lot of coffee. So, again, thank you, Ochani, for coming on and having a good time with us. And we'll have you back on, and we'll get deeper next time. And thanks for helping me out tonight and coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Thank you very much. And that's our show tonight, folks. Have a good night.
Bye, everyone.
Not too heavy.